Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife, a mom to four grown kids, granny to one little boy and one baby girl arriving soon, and I have been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. We are more than halfway through season 18, and we have had a couple of great seasoned homemaker portraits as well as a thorough deep dive into how to respond to medical and fire emergencies in the home. Be sure to go back and give those a listen if you missed them. Today on the podcast, I am bringing you another great homemaker portrait, and I will tell you more about that after I share what I've been up to in my home. It's time for Allison's Update, the part of the podcast where I tell you what is happening in my home and what homemaking resources I am loving lately. This update is brought to you by listeners who support the art of home through Buy Me a Coffee. Buy Me a Coffee is a virtual tip jar where you can show your appreciation and support for the show by giving a one-time tip or by becoming a Titus II woman supporter and setting up a recurring tip of $5 per month. Titus II women supporters receive access to a weekly audio version of Homemaker Happy Mail. Whichever way you choose to give, I am grateful for your support. So, last week, we quietly celebrated Valentine's Day at home with a yummy roast beef dinner and cozy British murder mystery. Currently, we are making our way through the Poirot series. That's the Agatha Christie Poirot series that ran on PBS in the 90s and the early 2000s. You can watch it on, I think it's BritBox. It's either Acorn or BritBox. Pretty sure it's BritBox, the streaming channel, and I think it's $5 a month. So you could pay for it for a couple of months and work your way through the series if you're into cozy British murder mysteries. My husband brought home some flowers and some chocolate on February 13th to avoid the craziness of the grocery store on Valentine's Day, which was nice because then I could enjoy them all day on the 14th. As far as what I'm loving lately, I have a couple of podcast episodes to recommend. Now, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and some I would recommend and others, maybe not. But last week, I heard two particular episodes that were so helpful and encouraging to me, I wanted to pass them along to you. The first one was one of my favorite shows, At Home with Sally. That's the weekly podcast from Sally Clarkson, who has been very influential in the homemaking community, and rightly so. She is a wise older woman of God, and I rarely miss her podcast. Last week, she had a special episode featuring her daughter, Joy Clarkson, who followed in her mom's footsteps as a writer and a deep thinker. And in this episode, they discuss her new book, You Are a Tree, and Other Metaphors to Nourish Life, Thought, and Prayer. And it was a fascinating discussion about how much metaphors shape our speech and thoughts, and we don't even realize it. It's just a part of how we communicate. And it is a big part of how God communicates through his word. Without taking metaphors to an unscriptural place, Joy insightfully points out some basic but repetitive metaphors that are in scripture, which help us grasp the nature and character of God and the reality that he has designed all around us. I pre-ordered the book and am excited to read it. I will let you know my thoughts afterward. The second episode I'd like to recommend is another show that is on my weekly podcast roll, Simple Farmhouse Life with Lisa Bass of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Lisa is a sourdough expert, mama to eight, and champion of homemaking. She has very interesting guests, great topics, and I always learn something from her content. Last week, she featured Natalie Hickson, the Angry Mama Coach, and they talked about what to do when motherhood brings out the worst in us. Natalie shares her own journey of working through destructive anger as a young mom. She has older kids now. And she gives some really helpful insight on why we feel the rage and the anger. And also she gives some practical suggestions on what to do with all those feelings so that we're not stuck in a cycle of sinning in our anger. Because the Bible doesn't say anger is a sin. It tells us don't sin in your anger. And then feeling defeated with guilt and shame because we did sin in our anger. So really great episode, some really practical help there. And I will link both of these episodes in the description box and in the show notes on the blog. Let me just take a moment to say here, I may recommend things that you may choose not to agree with or to consume for one reason or another. I may even have guests on here who say things that I don't necessarily agree with or that you don't necessarily agree with. Obviously, I am not going to recommend nor give an audience to ideas and teaching that contradict or undermine the gospel, but there are secondary and tertiary issues that we can agree to disagree on. Anything that is non-essential doctrine, that is, our salvation does not depend upon what we believe about that issue. And what I will say to you and recommend to you is do your own homework. Be like a Berean. Those were the believers who in the book of Acts, they are commended by Paul for searching the scriptures carefully to make sure that what they were hearing, these gospel teachings that they were hearing, lined up with scripture. So whether you're hearing teaching and ideas about God from the pulpit or from a podcast, test it against scripture and make sure it lines up. If you are a follower of Jesus, you have the Holy Spirit in you to help you practice this kind of discernment, but it does take some work on your part. I will do my best to represent Christ and his gospel faithfully here, but I am fallible and so are my guests. So take what you hear at the Art of Home and be a Berean. And by all means, if you are concerned by anything on the Art of Home, I welcome your thoughts and input because I am still learning and growing too. Now on to today's episode. I am chatting with Carita Fuller about her experience keeping a home for the past 10 years with her husband and stepchildren. Carita worked for the U.S. Air Force for 20 years before retiring and fully embracing her role as a full-time homemaker and helpmeet to her husband. We talk about her sudden and steep learning curve of becoming a mom, not to babies, but to teens. She had a very short runway to prepare them to leave the nest as capable young adults, and that was a big responsibility. Carita shares openly about how infertility can tempt her to compare to women who have what she doesn't, but that God has taught her that what motherhood looks like is not what she thinks it should look like, but what he says it looks like. I love her perspective on hospitality and how homemaking builds community, and she has some fun stories and tips and ideas to share. Just a quick sound note, there is some lawn care going on in the background at times throughout this conversation. It's a weird, freakish law of nature that when you turn on a microphone, somebody's going to turn on a lawnmower or a leaf blower somewhere nearby, and we share a little laugh about that. Just stick with us. It is not constant. And while it does get a little loud one or two times, you can still hear what we're saying. Thank you for trusting me with some of your precious time today. I believe it will be time well spent. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen, I know you will enjoy Carita's story of home. Welcome to The Art of Home. I'm here with my friend, Carita Fuller, and Carita is an in-the-trenches homemaker, and we're going to hear her story and all about her experience keeping a home. But before we do that, why don't you just say hi to everybody, Carita, and tell us a little bit about who you are today.
Hey, everybody. I am, like Allison said, Carita Fuller. I am a housewife, an empty nester, a bonus mom to four kids, and a grandmother to one. I'm a retired Air Force vet. I am a fanatical, voracious knitter and a tea drinker, never coffee. I've never even had a cup of coffee, as hard as that is to believe for some people.
Wow.
And I know. And I consider myself an extroverted introvert.
Okay.
Just because I like being out, I do. But as my hobbies are, you know, I like small groups. I like knitting in small groups or even by myself at home. So, and that's pretty much me.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. There's a lot there to unpack. So, yes. I want to go to the back, but I have a couple of questions first. Okay. Mm-hmm. What did you do in the, you said you were in the Air Force, right?
Yes, I was. 20
what did
years.
You do in the Air Force? 20 years.
Yes. I started out as a finance airman. So I was a bean counter and worked mm-hmm. in pay and budgeting. And then I transitioned to be a, it's a first sergeant. It's like an administrative type position in a okay. leadership tour in a squadron. So,
Okay. Did you travel? Yes. Did you have any expat assignments overseas or anything?
I actually did. I spent half of my career overseas. I was stationed in Japan immediately. And then I was in Germany and Guam and I've deployed to Iraq. I've deployed to Pakistan. I've deployed to the Philippines. And yes, stationed in the States a few times. So, and the, wow. My second to last assignment, of course, is when I met my husband and 10 years later.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited to hear that story.
I put down roots where he is. So
awesome. Well, I just want to say thank you for 20 years of service to our country.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. So When did you first become a homemaker and did you have any skills?
Well, I think that I consider myself becoming a full-time homemaker, embracing it in 2015. So that's when after my husband and I got married and I moved into his home with and immediately went from zero kids to four kids. Wow. So 2015 is what I say, you know, I became a homemaker. I had skills before then, you know, I've always been very organized. Of course, there's the military of routine and I was familiar with all of those things. But I have always been a baker. So I baked all of the things and that was, I'm sure, the one thing that I brought that the kids were like, oh yes, this is it. Welcome, mom.
That's awesome. What's their favorite thing that you bake?
My son likes, the last time I made red velvet brownies.
Oh, I've never had a red velvet brownie.
It is an Yum. Intense thing to have. But when the last couple of times I've made them, he's like, oh yes, this is the perfect dessert. And my daughter, I don't know, the last thing that I made that she really likes, because she's not really a sweets person. She likes soup. I made Zuppa Toscana and it immediate hit. So
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk more about food later.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about instantly getting a family of four kids. We're going to talk about that later too, but
yes.
We're still on the skills and I want to know what was the steepest learning curve you had? You know, what was something you really struggled with and kind of how did you overcome that?
The steepest learning curve, and this is going to sound odd, I know, was the momming part of moving into a home. Like I said, I didn't have any kids. And then all of a sudden I had two teenagers in the home.
Yeah.
My youngest two, they live with their mom. So, but immediately, you know, I had a 13 and a 14 year old. Oh, wow. And there was something that I never saw myself as was a mom. Like I said, I had been in the military for at that point 18 years and it was just me. So being compassionate, not being selfish. Everyone thinks that they're a gracious person when it's just you, but when you have teenagers in the home and a husband, all of a sudden you immediately learn their mom's got to be pretty, that's a very unselfish role to take. So the momming part of it, I don't think that I was ever mean or cold or standoffish, but the complete, my time, my energy, my effort now immediately goes to these people. Right. You know, that was a steep learning curve for me. You can learn to cook, you can cook, you can bake, you can clean, you can scrub all of the things, you can organize and budget. But until you're put in a position where you have to not be selfish without a choice and immediately, you know, that was new for me. And honestly, it was leaning into the word. Fortunately, we were in a church shortly after I got here. We found a church home and reading and learning what women do and what wives do and being a helpmeet and being a mother. Period, you know, that it's all there.
Yeah.
You know, Titus 2:3-5 is my favorite scripture because it outlines, look, you're supposed to, you know, teach younger women and raise the children, you know? So I'm like, okay, so I'm built for this. I'm made for this. The word says I know how to do this. And that just helped.
Right. But that whole dying to yourself part is what makes it all so hard.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I've always known that I would be a wife. Got it. Help me. Completely understood that part. But to be a mom is something that you can't quite prepare for. You mm-hmm. don't know what the expectation is. You know what the TV says. You know what social media says. You know right. what other moms say. But you don't know until you're in a position what your children will require of you. And then the dynamic of them being, you know, stepkids and not mm-hmm. my children, there was that thrown in. And so, yeah, it was, like I said, completely unselfish, being completely unselfish and dying to yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So as you've been keeping a home now for 10 years and mm-hmm. like, where would you say you're drawing the most, who had the biggest influence on you, you know, as you do this? Who do you look back on and say, man, that person had a real big impact on my homemaking?
You know, it depends on the situation mm-hmm. because my mom, my birth mom, because I have a stepmom, okay. she was adamant about keeping things clean and orderly. I'm the oldest of, you know, three. I have a brother and a sister mm-hmm. That I grew up in the house with. And my mom always made sure that everything was clean. There was a way that it had to be clean yeah. and a house kept. So, you know, she worked outside of the home. So as the oldest kid, I know, you know, how to take care of a home. Being a mom, though, and being a stepmom is my stepmom. That's my mom. We don't do step. And from the moment she married my dad, there was never a gap in her relationship with me, even though she wasn't my mom. And at this point, I was 17, I think, when they got married and about to leave the house. Oh. But she was always, hey, I'm mom. I know I'm not your birth mom. I'm not trying to fill that space, but I am mom, mm-hmm. you know? And I took that, of course, into my relationship with my kids.
Sure.
You know, they're stepkids according to paperwork, but these are my children. Mm-hmm. You know, I would do anything for them and whatever they need from me, I'm mom. Mm-hmm. So I definitely took that from her. The cooking and baking and cleaning, that came from just my experiences here. I have a very close church family mm-hmm. and, you know, being in those ladies' homes and talking to them and having them in my home. I've had groups, you know, small groups at my home and just talking to them about how to navigate different things. How are you preparing for people just popping up? How do you prepare for children that need X, Y, and Z, kids that need X, Y, and Z? So, yeah. And then of course my knit group, they are a constant reminder to me that you have to stop and slow down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, do you meet often with your knitting group?
We do. I meet with my knit group twice a month.
Oh, cool.
In person.
That's
and then
so
we
great.
Take field trips that, of course, because most of them are a lot older than me and they're retired, they all say, oh, let's go a field trip here. Let's go to this yarn shop. So they remind me that life does not stop when your children leave the house.
That's
life
right.
does not stop while your children are in the house. If you are married, you know, you still have to stop and slow down and take time mm-hmm. to do something that you enjoy. And, you know, just being around them is the best. So.
I love that you have that group. How long have you been knitting?
I have been knitting. I taught myself to knit. I want to say it has to be at least 15 or so years ago now. Well, actually, probably 20 or so years ago now. But once I retired in 2017.
Okay.
That's when it became, okay, so this is what I'm going to do with my time.
Yeah.
When I need to stop and slow down, this is what I'm going to do with that time. Uh-huh. And it became now it's kind of my jam. It's what people know me for.
So what do you make? Like, are you doing blankets or scarves or what?
Blankets,
what are you?
Scarves, clothing, socks,
okay.
sweaters,
okay.
shawls, wraps, all of the things I have knit.
Okay.
So, and still and knit.
I do crochet, but I haven't learned to knit yet. That's on my list of things.
I want to learn to crochet. I just can't wrap my head around it. It's an odd thing.
Yeah.
But
so I have a question because I was stalking your Instagram account and
yes.
it looks like you went to Ireland. Did you go there to buy wool?
What? So yes, one of the perks of being an empty nester.
Yes.
So there are knitting tours and one of the, oh yes, knitting tours,
really?
Knitting vacations, knitting retreats.
I had no idea.
And, oh, it's a whole world. And so one of the girls that I follow on Instagram, her mom is a travel agent and she wanted to put together a tour. Now there are already several knitting tours that go across Ireland and Scotland and, you know, all over that area. And she asked, she just put a call out, you know, how much support would I have if my mom put together this tour? Mm-hmm. And I looked at my husband and I said, well, go on. And I said, you know, I think it'd be fun to go on a knitting tour. And he says, you should go. And I said, well, it's to Ireland. And he says, ah, that sounds like a lot of fun. You should go. And I was like, well, I wanted you to go with me. And that took a little bit of selling, but it, because there is also a non-knitter component itinerary on the tour, he decided to go with me and we had a blast. But yes, lots of wool was purchased. Lots of things were done. All of the sites were seen. We went to Cork and Kilkenny and a couple days in Dublin. We started in Dublin and Dunlira. And yes, we were
over
Ireland.
That is
looking
amazing.
Looking at sheep and wool and all of the Irish things.
Okay. I had no idea. There was
in October again. This is it's really? An annual thing now. Yes.
That's amazing. Okay. Yes. We're looking at wanting to go to tour the British Isles and for sure spend some time in Ireland. So I'm going to have to get your top.
You have to find some meals. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about expectations. We kind of talked about that a little bit. You know, you kind of weren't expecting the whole mom thing to be so hard. But what's something else that surprised you about homemaking? Just something you didn't expect?
How much time it takes to run my house.
Yeah.
even though it's just me and the husband.
I know. It's like a job.
It takes a lot to run my home. And I don't say that in a bad way, mm-hmm. but you know, when you are no longer working outside of the home and I'm here all day, it's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that I did the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, the, you know, mm-hmm. the scrubbing, the going to get this, the running this errand, the, mm-hmm. you know, all of that in addition to working. So, how much time it takes to run my house was very surprising. And it's funny because I often explain that to my friends who do still work outside of the home. And they're like, what do you do all day? Because they think it's all knitting and bonbons, which we would love for it to be. But And I explained to them, you know, if you only worked in your home, you would be surprised how much time it takes.
Yeah. Yeah,
so to do it right. I mean, of course, there mm-hmm. are days when I'm lazy and I'm just like, no, we're just going to sit here and watch TV. Mm-hmm. But that time, those errands and things will catch up with you the next day. Mm-hmm. So that was very surprising to me. And I think it's surprising to a lot of people, even my husband. He's like, stuff just happens and you're here all day ripping and running. And so that was surprising.
Yep. Is there an expectation that you had to let go of? Something that you were like, maybe was really holding on to, but you just had to let it go for the benefit of your home and your family and your well-being?
That I knew how it would go every day and that everything would be able to be scheduled out. I definitely had to let that go.
That's the military speaking right there.
Yes. It's
like, I mean, all that order, you know, 20 years
order,
of that.
There's regiment, there is routine. And right. I had to let go of that all of those things would work out.
Right.
And I had to lean into what is the rhythm of my home, mm-hmm. you know, and going with the flow of my home. You know, I ideally, yes, I would love to be able to, I get up on Saturday mornings and have a tea and then I go do my shopping and then I come home. That doesn't work for my house, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. those types of things, that routine that I expected it to be, that if I said, these are the way things are going to go, that it's always going to go that way. I really just had to lean into what works for us, what works for our family, what works for our home and mm-hmm. make that the routine. Right. And then I'm not so stressed about it.
Right. And then what works in the season that you're in, because your rhythms change, you
know? Definitely. Yes. It was grocery shopping was hilarious to me because of course, when the kids were in the house, you shop on Saturday morning because mm-hmm. the things are going on during the week.
Right.
But now to shop on a Monday mm-hmm. when the grocery stores are empty and make sure that I have enough food to last me and the husband just through Thursday, you know, as opposed to buying in bulk on Saturday and coming home and packaging food and, you know.
And then it's all gone meals. Like by Wednesday. And you're like,
of course it's by Wednesday.
I just bought that. It's gone.
Yes. And now if I go and I buy groceries And the husband calls an audible and he's like, babe, let's go out to eat. And I'm thinking, but I got a roast in the refrigerator that I'm supposed to cook on.
Exactly. Exactly. Was it hard for you to transition to cooking for two?
It was not. But I'll tell you, it had to happen. I did learn that from my circle of ladies, that you can't neglect yourself and your husband just because the kids are gone.
Mm-hmm.
He still deserves meals for him. You know, he says he doesn't care, but we still deserve to eat a home-cooked meal. It can't be, let's go out to eat every night. We still deserve to have, you know, snacks in the house. We still, so that type of thing. It wasn't too bad. Buying less food, of course, took some adjusting.
Right.
But all the money I thought I would save by not having teenagers in the house, we end up spending because we go out to dinner now. And it's like, oh, let's go have a steak in the middle of the week. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It all evens out.
It all evens out. So
that's great. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about the kids, about parenting.
Yes, the kids.
So how did the addition of children challenge and enrich your homemaking? And yours is a different experience than when I usually ask this question. Usually it's the new baby coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've touched on this a little bit, but what are some ways that they really enriched your experience of the home? And
because I didn't have babies, mm-hmm. I love the fact that when I came in, it was an immediate reminder that we are raising adults.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of times when people have small children, my friends who have small kids, you know, it's fun to raise little kids because everything is new and great. And you don't mm-hmm. have to think about what are they going to do when they leave the house, because you have all that time. But with mine, they were, like I said, 13 and 14. So it was immediately, okay, I need to make sure that they see me cooking. I need to make sure that they see me and their dad's relationship and what a marriage is supposed to be like. It's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be stressful. We're supposed to laugh and joke with each other.
Right.
I need my son to know that you need to know how to iron clothes. You know, this is something that before you go out of the house, look presentable. So those types of things, you know, my daughter knowing how to cook. Mm-hmm. And seeing me cook and not seeing fast food every night and, you know, those types of things. So it was immediately evident that we're raising kids. And I loved that I did get that kind of slap in the face that these are grown people.
Right.
You know? And, and we need to raise them as such and treat them as such and make sure that they know things that will make them successful adults.
Yeah.
So, and I think that having them in the house immediately,
yeah,
that definitely helped. That was a very cool thing to see. See my son getting up scrambling eggs on a weekend morning is like, okay, he's good.
Yeah.
You know, I know that he can feed himself.
He can feed himself. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's such a unique perspective and experience that you have, because as parents, we know our kids are going to take off. Like I'm thinking like a plane, and we have a long runway when we get them as babies.
Yes.
But like you got them right before the plane was about to just
take off. Yes. Poof. Yes.
And you, I mean, I'm sure that was a lot of pressure for you to feel like, I gotta like launch these kids.
You know, my kids are amazing. They really are. When I came in, my husband was a single dad. So they came in and there was no, she's not my mom. Mm-hmm. There was no tension there because like I said, I came in with the mindset of, these are almost adults.
Right.
And just like with any situation, they need to be able to function whether you like someone or not, whether you know someone or not. How do you build trust with people? How do you build trust with people that you don't know?
Right.
So, like I said, it was an interesting thing. And I definitely like talking to people about it, because being a stepmom, bonus mom, stepdad, bonus dad, whatever phrase you choose to use, it comes with a very different interaction, not a better, worse, greater or lesser than their actual, you know, birth parent.
Right.
But it definitely comes with a different interaction that can be really good. I have an amazing relationship with my dad's wife. I really do. And it's because she came in as mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she came in and it's like, okay, I need to make sure that you are going to be a successful young woman that knows how to, you know, take care of herself, run a home. And so I just brought that into here with my kids. And
yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, let's talk about priorities for a minute. So what are some practical steps that you take to kind of help you set and keep your priorities?
First and foremost, being a helpmeet to my husband. Mm-hmm. He works very hard. So I try to make sure that he is comfortable and that I don't forget him. We spend a lot of time together because he works from home. So we are that couple that's around each other 24/7. but it's not bad, but mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I definitely have to prioritize being his helpmeet and all of the things that that means, whether mm-hmm. it's he needs X, Y, and Z, or he needs some space to just sit.
Yeah.
You know, definitely prioritizing that. And then, like I told you, I definitely love Titus 2 because it gives me, okay, when I feel like I need to be right up under him, well, no, there's other things that I need to do also. You know, I should be trying to go to Bible study. I go. I love my Bible study group. It's on Tuesday mornings. But there is the, you know, I do want to help my church fam. I do want to be there for my friends and my family. I do want to, you know, check on the people who need help. So, prioritizing those things, prioritizing what's in the word and not so much what I think needs to be done.
Yep. Okay. So how about social media? How do you have a relationship with social? I mean, you're on Instagram. I know that.
I do. Yes.
So like, how do you manage it? How do you keep that in check and keep from comparing and all that stuff?
Social media to me is like a magazine. Mm-hmm. And if I approach it that way, it's just something to thumb through while you're waiting to go and do something else. But there are always things that I need to be doing. Mm-hmm. Primarily though, have interests outside of social media. I have things to do that don't involve social media. Okay. And that I think is what keeps me from death spiraling and doom scrolling into social media. Like I said, I am a member of a knit group. I do go to Bible study. We go to church on Sundays. There's my whole house to run, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think if you prioritize those things, or when I prioritize those things, I don't end up spiraling down into social media, because it can get to be a little painful sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. the comparison. And they say comparison is the thief of joy.
Right.
That's true, but it's easy to say and, you know, harder to embrace when you got snacks and TV and you're just scrolling through Instagram.
Yeah.
So, yes, having priorities or having things to do, tangible things outside of social media definitely helps. But I don't dislike it. It has helped. I found you through social media, mm-hmm. my knitting community and social media, my housewife community and social media. So,
yeah,
I don't see it as a bad thing, but I definitely treat it like a magazine, just something to thumb through that next month there's going to be a new issue.
Oh yeah. Next week
there will be a new issue. And
this is out. This is in this week.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. No, I agree. That's a good way to think of it, as a magazine. And it's very, I think what draws us in is that it's pretty, especially Instagram, you know,
so pretty.
It's pretty to look at.
It's so pretty.
And then we can get those little dopamine hits if somebody liked our thing, you know, and that's the kind of dangerous, addictive part. But I love that you're saying have other interests. And I would say to have other sources of beauty in your life so that, you know, you're not just drawn to that one source of beauty.
That becomes your standard and source of beauty. Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed. For sure. Mm-hmm. It sounds like somebody's doing lawn care.
Can you hear it? Do I need to move?
Listen, no. It's so funny though, because it's like it's like a magnetic force when you turn on a microphone to record something.
Yes.
Somebody close by is going to start the lawnmower or the leaf blower or
in our yard.
So
we've been waiting on this man all week long, and today's the day.
Exactly. Because it's like a weird law of nature.
Yes,
I don't know.
It is.
it's a it's a joke within the podcast community. Okay. Well, it's fine.
Hopefully it's not too loud.
It's not. No.
Okay.
Okay. So, let's talk about temptations and challenges a little
bit.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So which of these temptations have you struggled with the most, and what is God teaching you through it? I'm going to give you three options.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, comparison to other women homemakers. I am just a homemaker. I'm not getting paid, so this is not a real job. Or C, superwoman trying to do all the things.
I definitely will say A.
Okay.
Comparison to other women and homemakers.
Mm-hmm.
But I love seeing moms. I love seeing moms and babies, and they're knitting for babies and cleaning mm-hmm. behind children and picking up toys, all of those things. But I can't covet children.
Mm.
So we've struggled with infertility. Mm-hmm. We have had a miscarriage. We have tried IVF and it was not successful. Mm-hmm. In our desire to have a baby, you know, mm-hmm. I love my kids, you know, they're wonderful. But I would love to have my husband's baby.
Yeah.
So that comparison is the one that I make when I see other women with their children and, you know, and having babies and being pregnant. And it's,
right.
it's a challenge to say, you know, to not say to myself, if only I had made X, Y, and Z decisions, you know, back 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But what helps and what is God teaching me through that is that even though I've not had children, I am a mom.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed for this life and I prayed for children and the Lord gave me four immediately without hesitation. Oh, you want babies? Here you go. and it's been wonderful. Also through my church family, I am a mom to a lot of teen girls who, if I would just, like I said, remember not to covet what I don't have, I would see that they're standing in front of me saying, "Hey, Miss Carita, how do you do X, Y, and Z? Where did you get this dress from? How do you, you know, do you cook? Do you have a recipe for X, Y, and Z?" So that's what God is teaching me through it, that I am a mom. That role is within me because he says that women are mothers, and what being a mother looks like or becoming a mother looks like is not what I think it looks like. It's what he says it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And all children need mothers.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's mom is upstairs working in children's church and there's a baby downstairs running wild, the closest mom, please get the baby. So that's what he's teaching me through it. That's what I've learned, you know, from him that, you know, women are mothers. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And just because you have not birthed a child does not mean I don't have any less responsibility
mm-hmm.
to be a mother.
Right.
You know, because it is a responsibility. It's you know, it's not just a cute thing to have.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just a cute thing to be and wear a mama t-shirt. There's responsibility that comes with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I love that perspective. That's so good. So besides besides the infertility and these struggles that we've talked about already, were there any particular special challenges or struggles that you faced in your homemaking journey?
Surprisingly, no.
Okay.
I think that was the biggest one because it was to me, like early on when we were trying, like I said, after the miscarriage, it was such a huge thing that I felt was looming over our marriage and mm-hmm. over what a home was to me. You know, again, like you said, social media, you look at social media and every homemaker, housewife, stay-at-home mom, stay-at-home wife account, they all have children.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you, like I said, it was a huge rock or a huge cloud mm-hmm. of how do I define, is my home still a home, even though there aren't babies in it running around?
Right.
You know, I know that it is. God says it is. You know, he's made it a home.
That's
you know,
right.
By virtue of my covenant family and my husband, this is a home.
Yes.
And yeah, that's pretty much the one big rock. And we still work through it. We still pray through it. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
I love everything you're saying here, because we, you know, we talk on the show about the pillars of homemaking. We've explored the first two, and the first one was identity. Mm-hmm. And that's number one, because that everything else hinges on that. And even like you're saying, when you're talking about, you know, it doesn't, just because you don't have babies running around doesn't mean it's not a home.
Yes.
And that is such an important thing for all of us to grasp, because our babies grow up and they leave.
Yes.
Well,
they do.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Sometimes they come back.
But if we've put all of our identity in having these children, and like, my home's not a home without these kids, or, you know, I'm not a homemaker if I don't have kids, because I talk to a lot of women my age who are empty nesters, and they're like, well, what am I doing? Like, is it okay for me to still be home and just primarily care for my home? I'm like, yes,
absolutely. Like I said earlier, your husband, you know, you were created to be his helpmeet. Mm-hmm. Having children is a plus. That's a perk. That's a benefit. You know, it's like, oh, I got this bonus thing too.
Right,
but
right.
We were created to be his helpmeet. And, you know, just because the children are gone, I think it is so important that we remember, hey, I'm still his rib. Mm-hmm. He still needs to eat. He still needs to be taken care of. There's still, you know, I still got to take care of Kate.
Right. We still have responsibilities. Yes. So, okay, I want to talk about hospitality a little bit.
Yes.
Tell me a practical way that you show hospitality in your homemaking.
I always have something available to make, like being able to make something from scratch and have those ingredients on hand. I don't care if it's just tea or coffee.
Yeah.
You know, always be able to warm someone with something, or even if it's just your home, it doesn't have to be, you got to go out and buy something. Make sure that you have a clean space for someone who may just drop by. Mm-hmm. It may not be, you know, everybody has this fear of unexpected guests. I'm not that. It doesn't stress me out. Funny story. So our next door neighbor a couple of years ago, we didn't know her because they just moved in, and she got locked out of her house on a rainy. It was pouring rain, and she got locked out of her house. And so, of course, in the middle of the morning, I get this ring on my doorbell at like 9:30 in the morning. And it's this wet girl I'd never seen before. And with the way the world is today, it's like, okay, Lord, I know you got me. So I open the door and she's just drenched. And she says, I know I've never met you, but can I please just use your phone? I locked myself out of the house. And I'm thinking, oh this is horrible. Come in, you know, we had a space for her to sit. I could go and get towels and dry her off and, you know, make a cup of coffee or some tea.
Yeah.
You know, so I think being prepared is the one practical way. You don't have to have an entire pound cake on the countertop every time somebody comes over, or roast in the oven with enough to feed 12 people.
Right.
But a clean place for someone to sit and, you know, a cup of coffee or tea, I think. Mm-hmm. Would go far.
Absolutely.
Being able to offer that to anyone who knocks on the door.
Right. Right. Or, you know, your kids or your husband or, you know, because hospitality starts at home with your nearest neighbors. And that's the people who live in the house with you.
Yes.
And I love that what you just said, being prepared. That's the most part. That's the biggest part of it.
And preparation, like I said, is not an elaborate thing. Just a clean space for someone to sit.
Doesn't have to be fancy.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. How do you think that homemaking helps to build community?
I believe it creates a welcoming posture in the woman.
Mm.
You start to carry yourself with an air and an attitude of, and a mindset that I'm available.
Mm-hmm.
I'm available to help. Like I said, it's dangerous out there in these streets. We know.
Right.
But to carry yourself with the mindset and the attitude of, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
I think people can feel that. If it's nothing but, you know, you have a welcoming posture, you're more likely to hold the door open for someone. If you see someone pushing a cart and they got babies, or, you know, an older man trying to get the cane in the door, and it makes you more apt to help. Mm-hmm. But but that comes from being at home ready to help.
Right.
You know, and you just kind of walk around with that same air in your community, regardless of what your community may need.
Right. Oh, I love that. I think I haven't really thought about it that way before, but because we just talked earlier about how, you know, you learned you had to really live for others and not for yourself, and pour yourself out. And I think there's nothing like homemaking to train you in that classroom. And so then your senses are kind of always like aware of that wherever you go. And I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the way you put that. It does create a welcoming posture. Well, that's what we pray for, because it can also create a different kind of posture.
Yes. It can create an overworked and trying to do too much posture,
which can often lead to bitterness and
resentment and all of those things. So,
right.
I agree. You definitely have to watch it and keep it in check.
That is great. Really good perspective. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, I have some questions for you.
Yes.
Related to your homemaking fails and wins and favorites and all of that. Okay.
Yes.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, tell me about your biggest homemaking fail so far.
Oh, the husband would laugh. The hubs would laugh. Waffles. About 3 months ago, I woke up and said I wanted some waffles.
Okay.
I don't know what was going on with me this day. But I absolutely could not make them. It was too watery. The flour was old. I don't know if the milk was old. I don't know if the bacon powder, I have no idea, but they wouldn't thicken up. And it was so bad. I got so frustrated. I poured it in the waffle maker and it just ran all down the sides. And I eventually just threw the entire thing, bowl and all, in the trash. And I'm just sitting on the couch with a complete attitude. Mind you, I'm a 46-year-old woman. And my husband comes out like, what is going on with you? And I said, I just can't make these stupid waffles. He makes waffles all the time. Never has a problem. But yes, huge fail. And I still to this day couldn't tell you what happened. Now I can whip up waffles like a champ. Never have a problem with it. But that day, they were really going to send me to my room in tears because I could not make waffles. And it's such a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
But yes, huge fail.
Okay.
Waffles. It was bad.
Tell me about a recent homemaking win.
A pork loin.
Okay.
I know it's bad that these things are about food, but
no.
A pork loin.
It's a big part of our job. It's a big part.
Every time we go out to dinner, we always get pork loin and it's delicious. Okay. And I tried to make one home and it was dry. And then I tried to make one and it was bland. And I just kept, I tried 8 million different pork loin recipes. And finally, I found the perfect pork loin marinade and recipe. And it came out flawless. All for my husband to say, you know, you put a lot of effort into this and it's delicious, but is the juice really worth the squeeze? I mean, you did a lot for this little 2 pounds of meat. But I'm very proud because it is delicious. It really is very good. And he says, it is an amazing pork loin, but you did a lot of work for this little 2 pounds of meat. Notice the common thread is he's my vector. I'm very much his helpmeet. I am. But yes, and he helps me also. But yeah, he said, it's delicious, but you did a lot. There was the ice bath and the...
The recipe. Okay. I thought maybe he meant like you put a lot of effort in all the trial and error trying to find the right one.
That too. But yes, it is an exact 20-minute ice bath and the brine water and the lemon. It's a lot of work. But it's delicious.
Complicated.
It's complicated, but it's delicious. So that was my recent win. I'm still very proud of that pork loin.
Okay, good. How about a product or resource that you are loving right now?
Pinterest cleaning tips.
Pinterest cleaning tips. Okay.
Yes. I don't know what it is that has me just on Pinterest looking for different cleaning tips for different things. So yeah, that I'm loving it. I'm loving it. The recipes are okay, but definitely the Pinterest cleaning hacks. I'm always down for a good cleaning hack.
Yeah.
And then the recipes, though, Half Baked Harvest website has become a fast favorite of mine. And, you know, my hubs, we eat a lot of those recipes.
Good stuff. I have two of her cookbooks and they're
I have two of them also. Yes.
They're awesome.
I do. Awesome.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
I think Pinterest is, I mean, so like really what they tell you in like marketing classes for all this world that I live in that I can't, it's just weird that I live in this world of doing content creation.
Content creation.
But here I am.
It's so cool though.
I know it is.
You do a great job.
Thank you.
Awesome podcast.
But they said, you know, Pinterest is really, you have to think of it like a search engine.
Yes.
And that's exactly, and I feel like Pinterest is the search engine made for homemakers.
That it is.
Because it's got all the things.
Yes,
that we
all
do.
The things. DIY snowflakes from brown paper bags and
everything.
Oh, yes. All
yeah,
of the things.
Everything. I love Pinterest.
But the cleaning hacks, I'm here for.
Cleaning. Okay. I'm going to start looking up cleaning hacks on Pinterest.
Yes.
Okay, but now do you have a favorite hack? It doesn't have to be cleaning, but do you have like a tip or a hack or something
yes.
you've come across that you love?
Yes.
Okay.
Strip your kitchen towels.
Oh, please tell me how have you done this successfully? Because I've tried and I was not
successful. Wash them in hot water,
okay.
baking soda, and vinegar. I know you probably don't want to throw both of those in the washing machine, but baking soda and vinegar and extremely hot water.
Okay.
Yes. And because I had the issue where, you know, your kitchen towels don't dry anymore. Your tea towels don't dry. They just smear the water around.
Right.
I strip my kitchen towels and wash them and then throw them in the dryer. But I don't use any other products on them, though. That was the key. Because
okay.
every other product puts a coating
it
on
them.
It
puts a residue.
Yep,
okay.
puts a residue. So no, I don't put any dryer sheets, no nothing. Just wash them in the vinegar, baking soda. I throw a little Tide Pod in there, but hot water, and that is it. And then dry them. They're going to be staticky, but it's okay.
How often do you do the stripping?
I've gotten into the habit of throwing a little bit of vinegar in there whenever I do my kitchen laundry.
Okay.
Kitchen laundry is like all the pot, you know, the pot holders and
yeah,
the towels
yeah.
and all. I just throw all of that stuff in there. I strip it once, probably once a month that I'll
okay.
do the baking soda and the vinegar. But normally I just put a little bit of vinegar in there and wash them.
So you
but
put a little
bit? I'll tell you, not using any other type of laundry product on them helps.
But you said you use a soap or are you just using vinegar?
Like vinegar when you and baking soda. Oh,
vinegar,
when I wash them?
When you wash them, yeah.
Oh, when I wash them, yeah. Sometimes I'll put a Tide Pod in there if they're really grubby, but for the most part,
just
vinegar.
Really
and the hot
water and vinegar.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
That is it. But no other laundry
products. Especially fabric softeners, because I
yes.
know that's
yep.
the culprit that really leaves the residue.
And dryer sheets too, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think people forget just because it's muscle memory to throw a dryer sheet in there. Like a wool ball or something like that. But yeah, I think that all of them, they just kind of add something to it. But my towels are now drying like a champ.
Okay.
I haven't done it for my bath towels though. That just seems like a lot of work.
Well, I read the thing about that and I did try it and it is a lot of work because you
yes.
have to soak them. And
right? That's a lot.
Like in your bathtub with a bunch of water and then
you
gotta traipse
them across the house. And
I don't have time for that.
Yeah, that's a lot. But the kitchen towels, like I said, I throw them in the washing machine with a cup of vinegar, a sprinkle of baking soda, let it fizzle up, and hot water.
Okay.
Hot water.
Okay, yep. I'm going to try it.
And I'm telling you, my towels are now drying dishes again. I was
Great.
So frustrated. I was ready to throw out towels, but...
You were ready to throw in the towel, literally.
You throw in the towel, literally, yes. I was.
All right, tell me, what is your signature dish?
Blondies.
Mm.
Everyone asks me to bake blondies. All of my friends love blondies. I bake them with chocolate chips and walnuts.
Mm.
That's kind of my jam.
Delicious.
I can whip them up easily.
I love things that are like a cookie, but they're in one pan. So I don't have to sit there.
Oh,
and
yes.
Do...
Then a blondie is definitely it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
it. And it's thick and chewy and not
Wonderful.
Too much chocolate. Yes.
Okay. Good deal. Maybe you might want to share that recipe
you
with us.
Definitely will. I will.
Okay. Well, some people are like, they guard their, you know, their secrets. And, but if you
oh,
would
yeah.
share, if you
yes,
would share, that
I'll
would be
share.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the art of home.
Yes.
So, how do you see homemaking as an art and where do you find beauty in the homemaking?
Oh, using, I see it as an art because it is using my personality to create an environment and an experience for someone. Mm-hmm. It really is my personality in the home. You know, mm-hmm. it's cozy knit blankets. There's, you know, a candle burning and all of that to create an environment that I want someone to feel, to give them the feelings that I want them to feel. Just like anybody that paints a picture, they paint it because they want you to feel something when you see it. They write a song because they want you to think about something when you see it. But when someone comes here, it's like, oh, I want you to be cozy. Mm-hmm. I want you to see nice fluffy wool blankets on the couch.
Yeah.
And put your feet up.
And have some tea.
And have some tea. Yes. So how it's an art to me. You really are using yourself to create an environment for someone else to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yep.
Okay. What's one thing about homemaking that you're thankful for?
It has slowed me down immensely. When I was in the military, like I said, I was in for 20 years and I was stationed at 8 different bases and deployed 4 different times. And now, even after I retired, I could have gone out and gotten another job. But now I am peaceful. I don't feel like I have to rush to be anywhere or do anything. Mm-hmm. I know my hubby. I know what he likes. I know what he doesn't like. I know what his cycle is as far as when he's very hungry, when he's not hungry, when he's sleepy, you know, because I'm here and I'm around him. I know my family. I have time to call them. I talk to my sister all the time now, you know, and it has slowed me down enough to not just know what's going on in my life, but know what's going on in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And I think that homemaking I'm so thankful for that, that being at home and caring about what goes on in my home has given me that perspective of, let me see what's going on with so-and-so, you know, so.
I love that. So, yep. I want to talk to the other women, the older women and the younger women. Mm-hmm. So we'll start. Oh, hang on. I got a bug in my eye.
Oh, no.
We have an infestation of gnats. I'm going to have to get rid of all my plants.
They're everywhere.
I think. Do you have this problem?
Yes. They're fungus, in restaurants. We don't
they're
have
fungus
gnats.
That's what they're called, apparently.
I have a pothos that I keep in the den. And when we went away for a weekend and it got too humid in the house, we came back and there were gnats all over. So I had to sit it outside for a little while, but they're everywhere.
I've tried all the things. The traps, I've got, you know,
did
the vinegar.
Did you do the vinegar and Dawn dish detergent and sit it out there, put some sugar in there?
Yes, and that works. But I think the problem is they're multiplying so quickly because they breed in the soil.
Yes.
And if you don't kill them in the soil, like kill the eggs, they multiply so quickly. You can't
ever.
Have
you tried putting something in the soil of your plant?
We did. My husband was experimenting with doing, it's like a peroxide, like you do a peroxide solution.
Yep.
And he did that once and that seemed to help a little bit, but one of the plants died. So I don't know if it was from the peroxide.
Yes.
It got a little too much.
I think that's what I did with the pothos. I did put it in, I put some peroxide in the soil, peroxide water mix. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Let's do these last couple questions. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to the older women and the younger women, but let's start with the older women first. How can the older women help your generation of homemakers thrive in their practice of the art of home? How can they come alongside you and encourage you?
We want to know what you know. I would say that we're not all too far gone. We're not all anti-homemaking. And I think just having conversations with us about homemaking would definitely help. Because then it would let us know, oh, I can go to her and ask her about this, as opposed to just saying, oh, all these young women, they just work and, you know, that's all they're concerned about is their jobs. So I'm not going to bother them, you know, because they're too busy. And I hear that a lot, that they think that we are overly busy. So, and I know it's a two-way street. But yes, we want to know what you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We do.
Okay, how about the younger women? What's a word of advice or encouragement that you would give to the women coming behind you?
Be a little bit more humble and reach out to mm-hmm. local women. Mm-hmm. They are not, I don't think older or younger women are very apt to approach older women. I know that sometimes we can be very standoffish. Mm-hmm. But I would say reach out, extend that olive branch. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said earlier, I know it's a two-way street. But someone has to make the first move. And if the young, if the older women are thinking that the younger women don't care and the younger women are thinking that the older women don't have, you know, mm-hmm. aren't interested, then no one helps anyone.
Exactly.
But I believe that the younger women should be the ones to reach out because they have the means. Mm. They are the most mobile. Mm-hmm. They're out in the coffee shops. They're out at the schools with their kids. They're in the parks with their kids and they see other women, mm-hmm. you know, whereas older women, I don't think are out as much. Mm-hmm. We go very few places. We go to church, knit group, dinner with the husband and home, you know?
Sometimes my husband will go out of town and he'll be like, did you go anywhere for the last two days? I'm like, no. Right. I checked the mail.
Yes.
I went to the mailbox. I checked
the mail. Yes. I think that younger women have more reach. Okay. You know, I think that they are on the social medias. They're on the, you know, they're joining the websites. They're, you know, setting up a whatever account, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever. So that's what I would say, you know, it's going to require a little bit of humility sometimes to mm-hmm. say you don't know. Mm-hmm. And can you help? So that's what I would say, to reach mm-hmm. out, like physically reach out to local women, be it church, library, the parks, the coffee shops, wherever, you know, a smile and a good morning will go a long way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. Well, so can people find you on with all your knitting adventures? Is that a public account?
It is a public account. It is a public account. Yes. All of my knitting adventures are out on Instagram.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
What's Ms. your...
It is... You want me to spell it out?
Yeah.
It is Ms. Karita Fuller. So MrsKeritaFuller. And that is all of the knitting adventures, all of the knits, all of the yarns, the field trips, the
fun.
Yes.
Okay. I'm excited to see that. I'm going to, I'll put the link in the show notes so people can go check out all that you're doing. And hey, maybe you'll get somebody to come on your next field trip with you.
I would hope so. I hope someone does. It is their blast. Like I said, our knit group is always open. We want to teach people to knit. We want to teach other ladies to knit. We have crocheters, of course. They're not all knitters. Some people crochet. It's fun. I love it.
My mom is a big knitter and a big traveler. And if she hears this episode, she's going to be like, I am so in for that.
Yes. She should go on the Irish knit tour. She should go to Knit Barcelona. There's
Ooh, knit Barcelona.
Tour in Scotland. There's,
oh, my goodness. Oh, how fun.
Tours all over. I'm telling you.
How fun. All right. It's a whole new world opened up. All right, Karita, thank you so much for being on The Art of Home and sharing your story of home. It's been really fun.
Me. This has been a blessing. I'm so glad.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this homemaker portrait of Karita Fuller. I hope you have found encouragement and inspiration that you can implement right away in your own homemaking. There certainly was a lot of good food for thought in this discussion, and here are just a couple of my top takeaways. The selflessness of homemaking and mothering. Karita said upon gaining her instant family after many years of single life, she quickly realized that being a mom is a very unselfish role to take. God put us into families to learn compassion and self-sacrifice, and our flesh wants to fight against that because it ultimately requires dying to yourself, your desires, your rights, for the good of another. But it is in that act of self-forgetfulness and self-sacrifice that we most resemble our Savior and find true life and freedom. And he said to all, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life
for my sake will save it. Luke 9:23-24. Likewise, Karita's perspective on how homemaking builds community through the welcoming posture of the homemaker was very insightful. Through the daily training of serving in our homes, she said, you start to carry yourself everywhere you go with an attitude that says, I'm available, I'm here to help. And people pick up on that and are drawn to it. Because everybody wants help and comfort when they're in need, and everybody wants to feel a sense of belonging. And that is what we do all day long, homemaker. So don't let it stop at your front door. Carry yourself with that posture of welcoming, generous selflessness everywhere you go by keeping your eyes fixed straight ahead on Jesus. And if you find yourself annoyed and irritated with people outside or inside your home, check your posture. Are you looking at Jesus? Are you letting him teach you the way of selflessness and sacrificial love? He's really good at it, and he's a patient teacher. If you want more homemaking encouragement, be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, Homemaker Happy Mail. It goes out on Friday morning, and we'll have detailed show notes from this episode, as well as some other helpful homemaking resources for you. Go to theartofhomepodcast.com/subscribe to sign up. And speaking of the newsletter, we have an audio version of the newsletter as a special thank you to our Titus II Women monthly supporters. For $5 a month, you can partner with us and receive access to that audio version. We also welcome one-time tips through Buy Me a Coffee, and of course, we appreciate when you support us by sharing the show with other homemakers and taking the time to rate the show and write a review on your podcast player app. I so appreciate all of your support, and if you want more information about how to give, share, and review, head over to theartofhomepodcast.com/support. Well, that's all for this episode. I will be back next week with a brand new homemaker portrait. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.